Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This is Hammond.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please stop whatever you're doing. Go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support the show. Mm-hmm. $5 a month, you get ad-free episodes, a bonus episode where we talk about, I don't know, life-threatening situations, apparently, based on last week.
Yeah, y'all, Hammond almost died in Washington, and none of us even knew where he was. Well, his wife did. I didn't. I did.
You also can join the Discord server for this channel. You could listen to this on YouTube. The weird thing about recording this on Thursday night, as we are right now, is that there's another major Supreme Court decision involving religion looming, and it could happen by the time this comes out tomorrow morning.
So we're immediately out of date.
But there's other stuff to discuss. I wanted to start with this disturbing story that's not even really news related, but it's just a reminder that the people who speak for evangelical Christianity are the worst.
Okay. Let's do it.
It involves Franklin Graham, the evangelist with over 10 million followers on Facebook, one of the loudest internet megaphones out there, and who is generally seen as kind of not just because of his father, Billy Graham, but like one of the unofficial spokespeople for like the religion.
Sure.
As far as Fox News is concerned, we need an evangelical. Can we call somebody? Get this guy. Here's the backstory to why he's in the news this week. You got to go back a decade.
Ooh.
There was a husband and wife. The husband's name is Saeed Abedini, and the wife's name, I'm going to try this, Nagme Panahi. But basically what you need to know is the husband is a Christian pastor who was in Iran in 2012, and he was basically arrested, I think, for like starting churches there, Christian churches in a very Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
It was religious discrimination, no doubt, not okay. He was arrested for it.
Mm-hmm.
All the evangelical Christians were begging the Obama administration, you got to do something to get this guy back. Do whatever it takes. And to be honest with you, I think in 2016, when this guy was finally freed, it only happened because of like a prisoner swap, which is controversial in its own right. But that's kind of where this guy's story is, right?
Okay.
So for 4 years, that means you had Christians trying to raise his profile, trying to tell the world, really, this guy is a clear-cut case of religious discrimination. We need to get the world behind us to help free this guy so nothing bad happens to him. And honestly, on that front, like, they're right. He shouldn't have been arrested. And again, he was freed in 2016. Here's where it gets a little weird. So for 4 years while they're doing this, Franklin Graham, the evangelist, is one of the people trying to fight for his release, which makes sense. It's in his wheelhouse. It's the perfect Christian martyr story.
It's the first actual Christian persecution that they've ever heard of. And so they're just really excited to see what it's like.
Right. And over the 3-4 years that this is happening, his wife, last name Panahi, she's been also fighting for her husband's release, which also makes sense. But the weird thing is, again, I said he was released in 2016.
Right.
In 2015,
uh-oh,
after years of advocating for his release, she basically stopped. She stopped saying, you know, break him free. What's going on?
What?
And she started telling a very different story. What happened around that time is that she told her supporters by email, I guess, that her husband had been abusive to her. She said she can no longer live a lie.
Whoa.
Yeah. And she later confirmed publicly, like, she had experienced, and I'm quoting here, physical, emotional, psychological, and sexual abuse through her husband's addiction to pornography.
Okay.
The abuse, she said, started early in their marriage and has worsened during his imprisonment, which I assume is the, like, psychological aspect of it, the emotional aspect of it. And she hadn't spoken to him, like, from mid-2015 onward. So, like, she said, and this was interesting, she said, when he gets home, we can address the serious issues that have happened and continued, basically saying, I do want him freed. He shouldn't be locked up for what he did, which was spreading the gospel in Iran. But also we have issues and like, right. I want to deal with them, but also I want him freed. And that's a separate thing. Okay. So separate story, add some nuance to what's going on here. You could tell why she stopped vocally pushing for him to get out, even though she wanted him to get out. There's your backdrop. So all of a sudden this week in the Washington Post, someone who has been reporting on her husband's saga for ever since that happened, posted an update. This is Sarah Pulliam Bailey of the Washington Post, posts an article recapping kind of that whole saga, along with kind of a bombshell that involves Franklin Graham. Because Franklin Graham had been advocating for the release of the husband this whole time.
Right.
But he was also, this is not a secret scandalous affair. That's not where this story's going. But he's been close to the wife, too, during this entire time. Because even when her husband's locked up, he is kind of her spokesperson, the one who has contacts in the White House. He's been close to her and their kids and all of that.
She's so probably dependent on him.
She depended on him. Yeah. He even provided like planes for her to travel so she can make advocacy pushes and things like that. But at one point, it turns out that when Franklin Graham first learned that she was accusing him, the husband, of abuse of all kinds. This is from the Washington Post. He asked her, are you cheating on him?
What?
Yeah.
Wait, what? Why?
Because she said, he's abusing me. I don't want to support what he's doing. I can't vocally be out there advocating for him.
So he thought cheating on him?
Yeah. So he thought, like, is that why you're no longer vocally supporting your husband?
A woman made a decision. She probably did it in bad faith.
Franklin Graham told the Washington Post that he suspected an affair because she had been advocating so fervently for her husband's release only to, quote, go cold on him. And so he told the Post, it was a good question to ask and I would have asked it again. All right. I mean,
not how is he abusive? Not are you okay? Is there any way I can support you during this time?
He assumed something weird had happened, which was true. There was a shift for a reason, but he automatically assumed she had done something, not the other way around. Okay, whatever. Bad decision on his part. Bad question to ask. That's not the problem here, actually. But as she told him about the abuse and the details of the abuse. At this point, you would think, okay, now he figured it out. So now he gets it. No, he said, can you, like, not talk about that stuff? Because we're all rooting for this guy.
Yeah, and he's our poster boy.
He's our poster boy, and we need you to, like, not ruin that. Can you, like, reunite with him?
Oh,
that's where he's going with this. She later described what he had done. I'm sorry, but I'm going to read this out loud. Uh-oh. She said the abuse involved, when they were together, kicking and shoving, beating her severely, her word, grabbing her by the neck during pregnancy.
Fuck.
Yeah. He denied all of this, I should say. He said, when I did stuff, it was in self-defense. And he also accused his wife of lying to promote her own ministry.
Of course.
But also, there's a question to ask of how come you didn't go public with any of this when he was imprisoned? You were advocating fervently for him. All sorts of reasons. That sort of thing happens. I mean, maybe she has a lot riding on the marriage. Maybe she didn't know how serious the abuse was in her own mind until she had a chance to reflect on it because he's gone for a while.
I mean, I can imagine she did not feel like she would have been believed or supported if she was believed, right? Like,
And she was also taught in like evangelical circles to submit to her husband no matter what. So you could see why she might not want to. Graham, though, told her, you're better off just not talking about it.
Sure. Your pain is making all of us uncomfortable. So can you just put it away?
Early 2016, after she went public, at least to close supporters, but before he was released, he wrote her an email, according to the Washington Post, that said,
Franklin Graham writing to the wife. Okay.
Saying, I'm not saying that Saeed is not guilty of abuse. I'm sure he's guilty of much more. The problem is you exposed him publicly to the whole world and embarrassed him. And you did this while he was still in prison.
Yeah.
When he cannot defend himself or speak about these issues.
That's a real crime here, is that she embarrassed a man. Truly the adage of Margaret Atwood, the men are afraid women are going to laugh at them. Women are afraid men are going to kill them. Becomes more and more true with each passing day.
I'm going to jump around chronologically here. Yeah. So all of a sudden then, 2016, the guy gets released. He gets to go back home. Mm-hmm. And yes, they are back together in their home for a little while. But during a visit with the kids, he apparently grabbed their 8-year-old son by the neck when he didn't clean up a water spill.
Oh, Jesus.
She had to take the son to a hospital and he was put in a neck brace. And after that, a judge granted a emergency order of protection.
Good.
Which is to say she...
Where are they living at this time?
I think she is in Colorado at this
time. Oh, they're in the United States. Okay.
Yeah. So she accused him of abuse. There's ample evidence of the abuse. Franklin Graham was like, can you like stick together for the hell of it? And
for the hell of it, for my benefit.
And then here's the most damning thing that Graham told the wife during this entire saga. According to the recording, which she provided the Washington Post, Graham said, yeah, the marriage can be fixed easily.
Oh.
He dismissed the severity of her abuse. He said, I'm not here to defend him, calling you bad names, yelling at you, whatever, saying I'm not here to defend what he did. And then she cuts in, beating me. Franklin Graham says,
oof.
Franklin Graham says, look, abuse is a gray area.
What?
And that an abusive husband, wait for this, an abusive husband, woman who says she's getting beaten, is someone who, quote, comes home and he takes a 6-pack of beer and he jumps off the chair because the kids are making noise and beats his wife and beats the kids. And that's something that goes on almost every day. Unquote. What? And that was not her situation, Graham told her, because he felt an abusive husband was someone who, quote, stomped on his wife every night.
Oh,
basically saying there's only
her
one
right.
Franklin Graham saying there's one definition of an abusive husband, and it's someone who's constantly always abusive every day of your
and
life.
It's a very like 1960s view of what like spousal abuse is the dad comes home and drinks a 6-pack of beer and you know beats the shit out of his wife, like fucking John Wayne Gacy's house was that like that growing up, like
right.
And yeah, that does happen, but...
And she chimes in after all this, I was beaten.
Good for
and
her.
And he just keeps going on and says, you know, he urged her to speak with him, saying, you know, you haven't had a chance to talk things out.
Okay, so this guy's having a PR problem and is trying to put out this particular fire.
And he even dismissed the idea of going to an abuse counselor.
Sure, we would
because
hate that.
He said, what's his excuse? Don't go see an abuse counselor. Why not?
Oh, they will talk you into the fact that you were abused, even if you weren't.
No, that's not his. That's not his reason. His reason is, well, you could get some godless psychiatrist.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, the godless person is going to be the problem, unlike the very good Christian who's beating the shit out of her.
So tosses out the possibility of seeing an abuse counselor because no amount of qualified expertise could possibly outweigh the fact that someone might not share his bigoted faith. Here's the good news. There's no good news, but here's the silver lining. The wife, Panahi, at some point, she stopped listening to Franklin Graham. And so they divorced later that year in October of 2016 after he had returned.
Mm-hmm.
She was eventually given full custody of their kids.
Good.
That guy is now somewhere in the Middle East. He didn't want to disclose the location. He doesn't want to be found. So, like, he's out of her life, which is good. Meanwhile, Graham, like, is... Graham's still spreading bigotry in other ways on Facebook and stuff. What's appalling is, like, this is, again, one of the most famous spokespeople for evangelical Christianity. Here is clear-cut proof of this guy giving the worst advice to a Christian in need of help at a time when he's publicly out there pushing for her husband and her in a way. Mm-hmm. And secretly he's like, yeah, but you know, you weren't really a victim.
So he cares about victims of Christian persecution, but not domestic violence victims.
Sounds like it. And
by
the way,
I had
to...
think is more common, would you say? And which do you think affects women more than men? Would you get, just out of off the top of your head, which one? Which one?
It's a very good question. I had to go back for a little bit. You know what he said during the Brett Kavanaugh hearings?
God.
Yeah,
what?
When he was accused, when Brett Kavanaugh was accused of sexual assault during the confirmation hearings, Franklin Graham summarized the accusations against him by saying, well, she said no, and he respected that. Which,
that
if,
isn't my understanding of what happened.
That isn't what happened, according to anyone's understanding of Christine Blasey Ford's story. But again, the point is, this is not the first time he takes the side of an alleged abuser over the words of an alleged victim because he cared more about, I don't know, gaining political power than expressing sincere empathy.
Also, he doesn't care about women. I want to be really crystal fucking clear on this point. This is a man who does not give a shit about women.
Yeah, he was more than willing to throw her under the bus.
Yeah, to further his own agenda.
Absolutely
he would. And he's doing it every single fucking day.
Oh, Franklin Graham.
Asshole.
Every time with that guy. I do not know why he's always seen as like the look at his... charity contribution. Their charity does so much. Yeah, they proselytize and force conversions and stuff. And yeah, this is the stuff he actually does with his power, and it's the worst.
Yeah, this is fucking terrible.
Okay, let's talk about the Supreme
and
Court
I'm,
case.
Sorry,
yeah,
I
go
know,
ahead.
But it just, there is no way that every single fucking pastor isn't giving this exact same advice to every abused woman who comes to him.
We just went through the whole Southern Baptist Convention sex abuse scandal, where many of the people in who may not have abused people themselves, people came to, like Paige Patterson that we talked about.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a guy who told a woman to go back to her husband despite abuse. This is a guy who told an alleged rape victim at the seminary he was working at, like, to, like, keep it on the DL or whatever. Like, this is what they do.
Yeah.
It doesn't help.
It's disgusting. It's so fucking disgusting how women are treated. It's just appalling.
So let's go to this changing gears. So the Supreme Court case that result did come out. This is the Carson v. Mackin case that was decided this week. It's not the Bremerton case with the praying coach that we're still waiting on as of this recording. Uh-huh. But here's the backstory for those who weren't familiar with the specifics here. I know we've talked about this before, still worth talking about. This case, Carson v. Mackin, students in Maine are guaranteed a free public education until they graduate high school. That's the case everywhere. Everyone gets to go to school. That's the rule. But in Maine, lots of parts of the state are very rural.
Okay.
So there are no public schools in the area, and the state still wants to guarantee an education for every student. So what they do in Maine is they say students can attend a private school if they want and will pay for it. It's a voucher system. Vouchers are bad, but like that's their voucher system. And they even say... And they're saying, we're not going to force you to go to the private school, but if you want to go to the private school and you get accepted by their standards, we'll cover the tuition costs or whatever it is. Like, there's money for that. They even say, I'm hypothetical situation here, if, like, a Methodist church happens to run a school, but it's ostensibly a secular school.
The same way, like, hospitals are sort of Christian, but not technically, or no?
Kind of, except Catholic hospitals have very strict rules about some stuff.
You're right.
But they're basically saying, look, if a church runs a school, but it's teaching history and science, and that's all well and good, we'll let it slide. We will cover that as well. That's fine. Which we could argue, well, you really shouldn't, but okay. So this case involved a couple of families represented by right-wing groups that said, yeah, but we want our kids to attend these two private Christian schools, like some of which say, if you're gay, you can't work here.
Cool.
These are schools that indoctrinate kids with creationism and things like that. One of our listeners I know wrote to us and said, like, if you want stories, I went to one of these schools. They are... that bad. I hope it's right. Emmy or Ellie, one of those two. Thank you for chiming in there. But yeah, like, these schools are Christian indoctrination camps. Mm-hmm. No one's arguing that.
Right.
They don't just, it's not just a private school. It's a private school where you learn, like, a conservative, fundamentalist,
right,
incorrect form of education. But these parents wanted to send their kids there. And the state said no,
mm-hmm,
not because it's run by a church or something, but because this is teaching indoctrination.
Sure.
You're not getting a secular education, and we're not paying for your religious education. That's what this case is all about. An earlier version of this case was filed, and, like, it lost every step of the way, the mm-hmm lawsuit from the parents, like, send our kids to Christian school and pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And every court's like, no, Maine does not have to do that for you.
Right.
But a couple years ago, the Supreme Court said in a different case, it was called Espinoza versus Montana Department of Revenue, they said taxpayer funding could subsidize private religious education, depending on the circumstances. So even though their case was tossed out in mm-hmm Maine, then that ruling came down and they're like, let's try again. So they basically did it again, and they lost in the lower court, and they lost at the appellate level. And, like, none of these judges are buying any of the stuff they are saying. Like, one of the judges is like, they make employees sign a statement saying God recognizes homosexuals and other deviants as perverts. And every employee has to sign a statement saying, yep, I agree.
That sounds like a fun work environment.
Uh-huh. So, like, again, these are not regular schools run by churches.
Mm-hmm.
These are promoting a certain religious ideology. One judge even said the Maine program is fine because it only says no to schools that are explicitly religious.
Right.
And one judge, David Barron, said sectarian schools are denied funds not because of who they are, but because of what they would do with the money. Use it to further the religious purposes of inculcation and proselytization.
What word,
like,
was that?
You're indoctrinating kids.
Oh.
You can't do that. It's not because you have Christian in your name.
Right.
It's because you're forcing this ideology on kids. But now you have a different Supreme Court, 6-3 conservative majority. That's why they kept fighting this.
Mm-hmm.
Supreme Court took up the case, and now you have all the people trying to chime in like, what are you doing? Don't take up this case.
Right.
Don't side with them. Atheists and church-state separation groups, if you look at all of their briefs that they filed with the court,
mm-hmm,
they're all making arguments such as, and I think this is important, this is what they're arguing. If you overturn Maine's law, you're violating decades of, like, established legal precedent. Nothing in the Constitution requires public funding for religious education.
Mm-hmm.
Maine's tuition program is already neutral
mm-hmm
toward religion because they're not saying, oh, it's a church-run group, can't get it. They're not doing that. The arguments for overturning the law would endorse a long-standing hostility toward atheistic belief systems. Because, mm-hmm, let's face it, in Maine, you're not finding, like, Islamic schools.
Right.
You're not finding atheist-run schools. It's all Christian,
yeah,
schools, let's be honest here.
Can we start a school?
We could. If you are revising the free exercise clause here, like, the First Amendment, if you pull up the text of the First Amendment,
mm-hmm,
I want to make sure I have it. Right. It says, like, the I want to make sure I'm getting it right. It says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, dot, dot, dot. But basically, yeah, Congress can't say we have, like, a national religion, sure, and they can't stop you from practicing it. And, like, but if you're giving, no one's stopping Christians from practicing their faith by not giving them money for their private schools here.
Yeah, they are. They don't want to.
They don't want to, yeah. So they're saying, don't revise the free exercise clause. It's fine as is.
And yet,
they also said the First Amendment says taxpayers are not compelled to subsidize religious worship. And also, the Constitution's no aid principle is meant to prevent government entanglement with religious education. If Maine taxpayers had to pay for these funds, for these religious extremist schools, you're basically giving them oversight into,
yeah,
a religious school. That's bad on everybody's side. Why would a religious school want the government waiting?
I think that's the piece that we often miss when we're talking about this, is, like, separation of church and state is meant to separate both the state and the church.
It's good for both sides.
Yeah.
So that's the decision that came down this week, and it's exactly what you think it would have been. Mm. It was a 6-3 vote with all the conservatives saying, yep, Maine, you gotta give him the money. John Roberts wrote the majority argument ruling, and he basically said Maine broke the law by not allowing taxpayer dollars to go to these private Christian schools.
What law?
Whatever one they make up. They can just make
up
their own rules.
This doesn't make any sense to me.
John Roberts can call balls and strikes and then just make up the rules for the game.
Broke the law? Broke what law?
Yes, the law.
What the fuck are these motherfuckers doing?
He said Maine's administration of that benefit is subject to the free exercise principles governing any such public benefit program. Who cares? What he's saying is, like, if you're offering money to private schools for any reason, you can't say no on account of religion. And what the other side was saying is they're not saying no on account of religion because, again, if a Christian church wanted to run a school that was teaching all the secular things you would expect, that's not what this case is about. This case is about promoting indoctrination and homophobia and creationism. We're like, the state of Maine should not be giving money to any school that teaches that nonsense. That's what this is about. It's not discrimination.
I mean, at what point is, like, so does that mean anything goes? Okay, well, fine. We can have a Christian school. Cool. I'm going to open a school. It's going to be called Jessica's Rules. And all we're going to do is, like, talk shit on men and smoke weed. So.
And apparently the state of Maine can't say no. Now, here's what John Roberts did say.
Maine,
he said,
my money.
Maine has plenty of options here. They could build more public schools just like that. They could make buses more available to students living in rural areas, as if that
had
never
been
considered.
Well, I mean, public school systems famously have a lot of money to deal with. So,
or even
these
operate
are good
boarding schools of its own.
Like, just a state boarding school? You think Republicans are now pitching state-run boarding schools? This is horseshoe theory in practice. These motherfuckers have gotten so conservative, they're like, no, the state should be running our church. Yeah, that's the ticket. This is what we've wanted the whole time.
Stephen Breyer, who wrote the dissent, was like, this majority, this conservative supermajority, now says the state must fund religious education in these circumstances, which is really the first time we now have taxpayer funding that is going specifically to religious indoctrination. Because you remember a few years ago, there was this case, Trinity Lutheran, where, like, I think the state of Missouri said state of Missouri said we'll give a grant to renovate playgrounds, and a church said, well, we want to renovate our playground, and the state said no, and then they sued, and the Supreme Court said, no, the church just wants to renovate its playground. You can't say no because they happen to be a church.
Yeah.
And this is the same argument, basically saying, you said private schools can have money, you can't say no just because they're religious, even though there are so many reasons to say no. Breyer also said the majority overstepped its own previous decisions. Yeah. Like, the state only denies funding to schools that will use the money to promote religious beliefs through a religiously integrated education. An education that, in Maine's view, is not a replacement for a civic-focused public education. Mm-hmm. Like, Maine wasn't doing anything wrong. But really, Sotomayor, who wrote a separate dissent, she's the one that came with the mic drop moments, which, again, it sounds nice, except you're in the minority, it sucks.
We need something to cling on to, please.
I want to read this thing that she wrote. I warned in Trinity Lutheran, however, that the court's analysis could be manipulated to call for a similar fate for lines drawn on the basis of religious use. That fear has come to fruition. The court now holds for the first time that any status use distinction, who cares, legalese, as a result, in just a few years, the court has upended constitutional doctrine, shifting from a rule that permits states to decline to fund religious education organizations to one that requires states in many circumstances to subsidize religious indoctrination with taxpayer dollars. She added later, nothing in the Constitution requires today's result. And then I think the last paragraph, one of the last paragraphs, today, the court leads us to a place where separation of church and state becomes a constitutional violation.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And this is before we get the ruling on the coach who wanted to use his position as a football coach to pray at midfield after games to make a spectacle for Jesus.
I just cannot help but think that we have turned into this utter might makes right country. And I think it happened quietly, but I might have just not been paying attention. But I guess I've never really considered. So this ruling that came down, how many times do you think they appealed?
Oh, this case?
Yeah, the case that just...
Remember, it went up to the Supreme Court two separate times, which meant it went through a district court, an appellate court, a full appellate court. Every single one of those things, both times, said, no, Maine is not wrong here. It took... The only reason it won this time around is because this time they knew who the justices were and that six judges... We have our people on the court. We got the Trump judges. We're going to try this again.
So who then? I don't know. Like, so so these people can afford to keep this lawsuit alive for however many years.
Oh, yeah. They had two organizations.
Do you have any idea how much money?
It's a time thing, really. I mean, you have two organizations that want this result, so they already pay their staff, but, like, this is what you're working on for the next however many briefs you have to file.
Yeah.
It is to ask them to do that for years on end for a case like this. We're talking a lot of time put into writing these briefs, a lot of people working on the briefs. It is a lot. I mean, it's not a money thing.
It's a resources thing.
It's
absolutely.
They knew they could get a victory on this, and it would shatter church state separation even more. That's why they were fighting it. And again, they could have gone to the court during the day of the oral arguments and got up to the microphone and just sat down.
Oh yeah, they could have farted in that mic, and they still would have gotten.
Would
the
not
same
have made
thing.
A difference.
Oh boy,
just while you're
sucks.
Thinking of things, Americans United for Separation of Church and State said this is nothing less than gaslighting to cloak this assault on our Constitution in the language of non-discrimination.
Yeah.
American Atheists said the Supreme Court has betrayed our nation's founding principle that the government should not fund religion. This court is destroying the Establishment Clause. Freedom from Religion Foundation. The Supreme Court is engaging in blatant judicial activism.
No, they're calling balls and strikes, remember?
Yeah, right? This is one of the bigger direct hits on church-state separation and the Establishment Clause and everything that we have known about religion. It very much, if you happen to be a conservative Christian, you are going to get your way in front of the court. We're about to see that with the abortion ruling. Mm-hmm. We may very well see that in the football coach's ruling, though, I don't know, maybe they'll throw a bone and say, yeah, this particular case, you're insane.
And then they'll be like, well, pretend. If you bring me this and right. that, then maybe we got a game.
You hit the wrong horse in this particular case. And then they'll pretend like, see, we don't just give victories to everybody.
Which, like, but, fine, if that's how we get a smart opinion to throw us a bone. This is pretty devastating, Hammett.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Again, could someone else start a private... I mean, the hoops you have to jump through to start your own school and get it into this program. If Maine, which it's not going to do this, but if it wanted to, what it could say is, you know what? We're not paying for religious indoctrination. The court's going to make us pay for it. But the answer to that is, you know what? We're not where you have to change the rules of who gets money for this sort of thing.
Mm.
We got to get rid of the private school reimbursement altogether. Like, there are legislative ways to get around this stupid ruling.
But going to cost money and resources.
And it hurts students who were actually using the money for the right reasons to go to a school because they happen to live in a place where there is no public school nearby. So ultimately, this is going to hurt kids because, like, in some cases, maybe the closest school near you is one of these Christian indoctrination camps. And it's like, well, I can go to that school and get it paid for. But right now, I don't know. What are they going to do? Get you, if they take away the voucher program altogether, what other choice might you have? It all goes to this conservative thing of let's wreck public schools as much as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe people will homeschool. We love that. Maybe they'll go to private Christian schools where tuition could be paid for by their donors, mm-hmm. and we're getting them into the indoctrination hole. That could happen too. But like there have been so many different kinds of, and that's going outside the culture war things where they're like every teacher's a groomer in disguise.
Yeah.
They're trying but to also hurt they public all have education.
Guns. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course, what are decent teachers going to say? Like, that's not the job I signed up for. Hmm. I just will find a different profession.
Also, sorry, where are we finding all of this money all of a sudden? There's like fucking 35 kid classrooms all over the country, but they're like, oh, no, we can drop $100,000 on each person to get a gun, get trained on it, and be insured for it. Yeah. We absolutely have that money. Congratulations. I hope none of your students accidentally got shot. But statistically, they're gonna. Man. Bye.
I don't know what they're going to do in some other states where that sort of thing could actually be implemented. I don't know what the teachers are going to do in those states. I don't know if they're going to stay in the profession. It's.
Do we know when the Roe decision is expected?
Could be Friday. If not Friday, it's probably the last one they're going to do. And my guess is tomorrow, Friday.
Week?
Yeah, tomorrow's not going to be the last day of oral of opinions.
Uh-huh.
So probably sometime next week. It'll be soon.
Okay. I hope we catch a nice day because we're going to protest.
This various sentiments online, but it's like, oh, that's nice of the Supreme Court to give us another 24 hours of rights, bodily rights.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is.
My friend Anne, my oft mentioned friend Anne, texted me and said apparently there is going to be a march in Chicago whenever it comes down.
Oh, I'm sure everywhere.
We're going to
march.
And I was like, God, I really wish they could take away our rights at like a nicer time of year because it's very hot in Chicago and marching is going to be unfun. But
if
you
could ruin democracy on like an 80 degree day,
it would be
that
just
would,
really appreciated. Mm-hmm. Like, remember the women's march? We got that really gorgeous day in Chicago. I'm just asking for that.
Maybe they'll be considerate and take away your rights on a nice day.
On a nice day. A when nice I'm day. Like free.
I mean, but you know they're going to do it the day it rains across the country. Just to spite you one more time. I'm going to switch gears here. Herschel Walker, the Georgia candidate for Senate, running against Raphael Warnock, who's fantastic.
Mm.
Herschel Walker, who has nothing on his resume to qualify him for that position other than he won a Heisman back in the day.
Oh, it's our football playing friend.
Here's what he said. In an old interview that was resurrected
this guy's
this
like
week.
A full-on loon, right?
Oh, completely lunatic. And he doesn't want to do debates. You know why? Because you don't want to see this guy try to talk in full sentences.
Oh,
he
boy.
Can't.
Whoa, boy.
Like, you know how Dr. Oz sucks, but at least he has TV presence because that's been his job for the past forever?
Yeah, it's
imagine a guy with no principles like Oz, but also has no TV potential either. And just word salad every time.
Now,
I think this
Georgia
week
is a pretty red state. I'm surprised they couldn't drum up a better candidate.
Trump endorsed this guy, and I think he even said like if Stacey Abrams doesn't love Georgia, she can move to one of the other 51 states.
Oh, he did the math backwards.
He did many things backwards. Anyway, that's not what I want to talk about. Here's
he
an old added interview.
One instead of subtracting one.
Here's
it's
an
hard.
Old interview they found with him where he said someone asked him, I don't know how old it is, but they asked him like, is multiple personality disorder, which he suffered from, is that a mental illness of some kind? They asked him, like, do you think you're struggling with a mental illness because you have this
multiple
personality disorder? And here's what he said. Do our Lord Jesus Christ have a mental illness? Because he said he's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. To me, those are three different personalities.
Okay, I have a few problems that I just want to throw up here, first of all. I don't think multiple personality disorder is an accepted diagnosis of anything.
I'll take your word on that. I don't know the answer.
It's like, there was a whole thing in the 70s where What's-Her-Face wrote that book Sybil, and everybody had multiple personalities all the time, all of a sudden, and then everyone was like, that, I don't know, that's real. So that's my first concern, is that means he probably hasn't been to a mental health physician in at least 30 years, which is neat. So that was one thing. The other thing is, did he accuse Jesus of being a crazy person? Is that what
Well,
happened?
He's saying, yes, Jesus has multiple personality disorders, but of course he's not crazy, and I'm just like Jesus.
I mean,
you guys?
He was crucified, so some people didn't like what he was doing there. I wouldn't say right. that he was well accepted
and
in,
also,
in his time.
Jesus, even conservative Christians would be like, those are not three different personalities. They're three aspects of the same one. That's the whole point of the Trinity. Here's the thing. If Raphael Warnock, the reverend who's the Democratic senator yeah. and running for re-election, said exactly what Herschel Walker just said, they would crucify him for it. Mm-hmm. Like, what did you say about Jesus? But because it's like a Republican, so everyone grades on a curve, like he gets no serious backlash for any of this.
Mm. Oh, it's called dissociative identity disorder now, but it's...
Okay. I'm sure he doesn't care.
Oh, no, no, no. He doesn't care about what the science has to say. I can be goddamn sure of that.
It's one thing, like, when Trump went, like, Trump's your guy, conservative Christians. Like, do you know all the ways in his entire life he's mm-hmm. not any of the values mm-hmm. that you preach? Mm-hmm. Like, do you want me to point to the three wives? Do you mm-hmm. want me to point to the kids he doesn't keep track of?
The affairs.
Like, what is it that you like about this guy?
And, he's rich.
And here's the thing. With this guy, Herschel Walker, it should be so much easier to just be like, this guy has no qualifications. He cannot be a senator. Mm. But also, he's piggybacking his entire campaign, knowing he has the conservative Christian vote locked up, even when he says stuff like this, that would be clearly described as heresy by anyone else.
So embarrassing. It's so embarrassing for them all.
God. Which story should we go to next?
I don't know.
Let's
Is there something
try.
Good?
Okay, I will go to this one because I was actually kind of impressed by what a church did here.
All right.
It's a story that just came out. Here's the story here. There's a Christian musician named Chris Rice. You probably haven't heard of him. Nope. I certainly have not heard any of his music. He was really big in the world of contemporary Christian music back in the day. Yes. This is a guy, there's a Christian version of the Grammys called the Dove Awards. Yes. In he's been nominated for a ton of Doves.
Oh, so many
he
Doves.
He won the Dove in 99 for Male Vocalist of the Year. He's received nominations in 2000, 2002, which is all to say, in the Christian music world, at least around like 2000, uh-huh. give or take a few years, he was a big deal, which is fine. Okay, cool. During that time period, several songs he wrote were recorded by more popular Christian artists, the type of songs you would hear played in churches uh-huh. that do that type of music. He was played on Christian radio stations, so a big deal.
Sure.
Okay, so it turns out this guy is also friends back in the day with this youth pastor named Brad Waller. And Brad Waller worked at a church, big church in Kentucky, called Tate's Creek Presbyterian Church. Okay, none of that you need to remember. But the point is, like, this guy Waller is organizing youth events for this big church.
Okay.
And he's trying to get kids to come on down to, you know, learn about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, buddy of mine, who's this famous singer, come on down. Let us get you here for some big event. So you sing songs for the kids who know you.
Okay.
And like, you're a big draw. Like, they put his name on the poster. They put his picture on the poster uh-huh. to promote their activities. Okay. So that happened.
Okay.
A while ago. So a couple of years ago today, like a couple of years ago, it turned out some sex abuse allegations were made against Brad Waller.
Okay.
That youth pastor.
Right.
And so what does the church do? They said, okay, we need to investigate this. They actually hired an outside Christian group, but an outside group with some credibility.
Mm-hmm.
It's called GRACE, Godly Response to Abuse in the Christian Environment. Okay, whatever.
Right.
They hired GRACE. They said, we want you to do an investigation into the allegations.
Uh-huh.
Like, you have whatever resources you need. Go figure this out. So they investigated the allegations against Waller, and basically they found out, like, he definitely crossed some lines. This isn't about Waller, so I'm not going to get into all of that, but they mm-hmm. basically said, yeah, he definitely crossed a bunch of lines, totally inappropriate, and this guy had long been kicked out of their church. He was working somewhere else, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But during the investigation, one of the kids who had made an accusation against Waller said, oh, by the way, that guy Rice, who was singing at some of those things, he was also inappropriate with me. And Grace goes to the church and says, like, hey, while we are doing this report on Waller, you should know this about this guy, Chris Rice.
Uh-huh.
And so what does the church do? The church says, well, shit.
Uh-huh.
We're going to hire you again to do a different investigation about that guy.
Okay.
This week, a 29-page report produced by Grace for the church was publicly released detailing what they found out about Chris Rice.
And it was all really good and everybody's happy?
That's not what happened. To summarize Christianity Today's take on the thing, young men looking for a mentor in the music industry said they found the singer was more interested in touching them than talking about songwriting.
Young men?
Young men.
Okay.
I'm going to summarize. Here's kind of, there were a, I think there were 7 boys that they spoke to with allegations against him. One, it went very far. A couple of them said it crossed a line and a few didn't want to really participate. They all have pseudonyms in report. But here's what the report says. By the time one former student was 17 or 18, Rice, Chris Rice, the singer, also began massaging his thighs, touching his crotch, putting his hand down the student's boxer shorts on multiple occasions.
Oh.
That's sexual assault. That's the first one. Another student stayed overnight for a week in Rice's home after graduating high school, and the two both slept in a tent indoors. He said Rice asked to see his back muscles and would grab his thighs in a way that made him uncomfortable, crossing a line.
Yeah.
A third said Rice sought him out for one-on-one conversations and time together, and when Rice fell asleep lying on him in a bus ride, the student saw their interactions, he saw it at the time, as a bromance, but now, in hindsight, he views the behaviors as grooming.
Boy.
Grace, the organization, concluded that the student ministry culture at the church blurred many boundaries with so much prolonged physical touch and unaccompanied overnight trips. So that's their report, basically saying this guy crossed so many lines so often, whether it's through his words, his actions, the creepiness of all this stuff I just said. And at least in that one case, no, he definitely crossed lines and did something that would be considered sexual abuse.
Okay.
So that is what came out this week. I brought this up as a story, not a really about him, but like, if you're the church and you heard these allegations, like, what do you want them to do? And what I saw as I'm reading every article I can about this guy is I'm looking at the church and it's like, if you go back in time, clearly they did not have their shit together to stop this from happening in the first place. But the question I also want to know is, okay, what are they doing now?
Yeah.
It really does seem to me like this church did every single thing I would have wanted them to do today, knowing, like, okay, someone came to us with an allegation. What should we do? Let's give it to an outside group, even if it's a Christian one, but the Grace has credibility in this world. Let's give it to them to investigate. We will help them as much as they need, and we will make the results public. We're not going to hide it. Like, among other things, this is from the church's senior pastor, Robert Cunningham. He acknowledged the church's complicity in all of this. He said, we failed to have formal policies in place that could have prevented these encounters. We did not create a culture of awareness so that young people at our church really understood what abuse looked like. He said, we believe, this is a quote, we believe that if our people understood the nature of grooming behavior, particularly from those with spiritual authority, it could have been identified and prevented. Unfortunately, that was not the culture of our church at the time, which allowed grooming and inappropriate actions to take place.
Wow.
He acknowledged that. He said, we are going to respond with the utmost transparency, including releasing this report that the church commissioned to the public, saying we're going to put that out there. He said they offered 15 recommendations at the end of the report. Like, this is what your church needs to do from here on out. He said, we're implementing all of them. We're at least going to do everything we can to implement them. He said many of them were already implemented in the wake of the Waller investigation.
Oh.
But like, if there's anything new, we will take it seriously. We'll do that. He said that, you know, while this investigation involved our church specifically, he wanted to make this transparent because Rice was a contractor.
Yeah.
Like, he was a musician who, he wasn't on staff.
No.
He just came to their events. He's like, but he may have worked for other churches.
Sure.
So other pastors, I encourage you to do your own investigation too.
Wow.
I mean, like, that's
good
what you
him.
Want, right?
Yeah.
Like, you screwed up in the past big time, but like, you acknowledge you screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking through everything the pastor said. I'm like, what have you not done that I wish you would have done? I came up blank. I'm like, you're saying all the right things. It's not just talk. It's action too, which is important. The one thing, I guess, is they assumed someone professing Christianity was inherently virtuous and deserving of trust. And they should never make that assumption. And he has said, like, we should not have not done, like, background checks on these, which I don't know what they would have turned up at the time.
Of course.
But it's like, I wish you would have acknowledged that, like, just because they're Christian doesn't mean they're good. The one thing he said about that, I think, he made one comment about, you know, just, I'm going to screw it up, so I don't want to say it. He kind of alluded to that. But he didn't say that outright. I wish he would have. But again, that's me complaining. Like, it shouldn't take allegations of sex abuse for church leaders to realize it. But if they all responded the way this guy did, not covering it up, not saying, you know, we tried our best, or like, it wasn't really abuse. Like, no, he's not doing any of that. He also, I found this interesting. He said, if there are questions about any of this, I am the point person. Like, here's my email. If you want to know more, if you have questions, if you're another pastor or someone with other allegations, here's my email. This is who you need to contact because I'm the point person for this. I'm the head of this place. I take responsibility.
Good for them.
I mean,
where
the
is
right
this
response.
Again?
This was in Kentucky, is the church. Tate's Creek Presbyterian Church in Kentucky. For what it's worth, Rice, the musician, he did not respond to any of the reporters' requests for comments. His social media has been taken down almost entirely. He's MIA. But again, the only reason I bring that up now is I'm like, you know what? As far as church responses go, could have been much, much worse. That's what you want to see in a horrible situation like this. Okay, this is, I don't remember if we talked about this last week because I think it happened last week. But okay, so on Twitter, anyone who follows me would know, like, I have a disturbing habit of just watching and listening to, like, crazy fundamentalist Christian preachers.
Yeah, we're
specifically
all upset about it.
Yeah.
We're gonna have an intervention with you, give problem.
New independent fundamentalist Baptist preachers, because they all just say crazy shit, especially about LGBTQ people. And one of the things is, if you listen to the rhetoric they have, where they're like, we think LGBTQ people deserve to be executed, but like, but by the government, us. Like, they go out of their way to add that caveat. Like, we're not asking you to be vigilantes.
Yeah.
We're asking.
This isn't a banana republic. We're going to have them executed through the proper channels.
Right. You committed a crime. We're going to have you tried in court. And when you are found guilty of being the gay, then the government, in a righteous Christian government, would have you, like, that's the way they think they sound better. But their whole thing is like, we're not pulling any triggers here. We're not calling for violence. They say this over and over. And of course, the response from myself and anyone listening is like, okay, maybe the pastors aren't going to do it, but they know what they're doing.
That's what we call covering our ass in the industry.
Like, you know what you're saying to the people in your strip mall church.
Yeah.
Like, you're giving them permission. Like, if you do it, you're just acting on God's
behalf. I mean,
it's
what I would do, the pastor says, if I, you know, didn't have this stupid pastor job, but I sure wish somebody brave, like, unlike me, would murder some gay people.
Everything they say is with a wink, wink, and it's like, dude, what are you doing? Okay, so I bring this up because last Friday, a 27-year-old guy in Washington State, Tyler Dinsmore, was arrested by the Oak Harbor Police Department. Why? Because apparently he had made repeated social media posts threatening to kill, LGBTQ people at a pride parade the following day. The police arrested him Friday before Saturday's pride parade. According to the court documents, this guy posted on social media on the right-wing site Gab, which is like the Twitter clone for conservatives.
Oh, I see.
He posted on there that he might not make it through this F month. It's the slur for gay people.
Oh.
He might not make it through this month. And he was 9 millimeters away from, like, basically killing two Fs at Home Depot yesterday.
Oh.
Like,
Thank you for your resistance, sir.
Yeah, and then he posted a picture, a flyer, for the Pride Parade with the caption, "Talk me out of it." That's what this guy is doing.
That's scary.
And by the way, that's not all. A woman who rented a property near this guy, who happened to be she's a lesbian.
Uh-huh.
She rented a property that happened to be next to him. She heard him openly express his desire to murder gay people.
Sure.
She said he had the words "Bible bigot" painted on his truck. And heard him shout out, "It used to be legal to kill gay people." She had to tell her kids, like, "Go inside.
Yeah.
Do not come outside here." She later saw him with a weapon, and she also found out from another neighbor that this guy had recently pointed a gun at a black man who was trying to return a fishing pole somewhere. So, like, when you
add
all this up.
And homophobic. That's so rare that you see both of those traits in one person.
So, you know, I had to go down his rabbit hole. And so as I'm looking through his other posts, you can also see at one point that he's very clearly telling people, you got to check out this sermon from one of these new IFB preachers.
Oh, boy.
And he says them all. He mentions all their names. And then I find, like, jackpot. He posts a picture of one of these guys in particular, one of these pastors, and the screenshot is of the pastor baptizing someone in a pool.
Okay.
But I know that pastor because I've seen his sermons, because I'm a sick, twisted man.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler Dinsmore writes in the caption, "I won this brother to Christ. Here's his baptism by my pastor." So, like, literally saying, "Hey, that crazy guy who does the sermons, that's my pastor." So it's like, okay, so not only are you one of these new IFB members, like, you belong to a church from a guy who is repeatedly called for the execution of people. I reached out to that pastor. I'm like, "What you got to say about that?"
And
he did not respond to me. I don't know why. I reached out to one of his colleagues who usually responds to emails, did not respond to me.
Really?
So here's the thing. Police arrested this guy on Friday because they were like, "We are not waiting until Saturday to see what you do."
Yeah.
Like, no, we have enough reason to think you are a threat to people. He was arrested. I don't know what's going to happen as a result of that. It does show me there is a direct connection. Like, my worst fears about those sermons is that you're creating a direct line.
Of course.
To give people permission to hurt gay people. Mm-hmm. These are the same Christian pastors who, like, celebrate, like, the Pulse nightclub massacre.
Yeah.
They've said stuff like that. And, like, again, the argument from people like me has always been, like, yeah, I don't think you're going to do it, but I think you're going to, like, pretend you had nothing to do with it when one of your members does it.
Again, the plausible deniability
and
of it all.
Here is a guy who, by the way, owns a semi-automatic rifle, who got arrested on Friday.
Yeah, what state was he in, and what are their gun laws?
Washington State. It's a liberal place, but, like, you can have, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, Washington's tricky. Like, Washington and Oregon are both very liberal on the left, and then, or on the west, and then the further east you go, you get a nice gradient there. So you get real conservative people over in, like, the Walla Walla area, if I remember correctly.
I should say I got a message. Coincidentally, I posted another separate clip of another pastor saying crazy shit. And this is, like, Thursday of this week. This is yesterday.
Today's Thursday.
Wednesday night, rather. And guess who tweets a response? It's the baptizing pastor of that church.
Really?
Who says, like, I said, "Hey, look, this other pastor is saying that gay people should be executed.
What say you?"
And yeah, this pastor just chimes in out of nowhere. "By due process, not by Christians or anyone else, judged guilty for a capital crime and executed for a crime." Then he adds, "Are you a queer?
have you actually come out of the closet yet?
Asking you?
Asking me.
Oh.
To which I respond, hey, isn't your church the one where a member just got arrested for making death threats about a pride parade?
Uh-huh.
I don't recall his plan for due process. To which the pastor says,
very funny response.
Is he my church member? I hope you don't get sued for slander.
That's not what
slander
is.
To which I say, he publicly said you were his pastor. I also emailed you about this earlier and you did not respond. He responds, P.S. Are you a queer?
A queer is an interesting.
And then later he says, you should take your slanderous article down. To which I say,
article.
My dude, or as someone suggested, my brother in Christ, it's mostly screenshots and video of you talking.
Yeah.
That's my article. So that's my conversation with the creeper threatener guy's pastor.
Wow. Is it fun being famous and going to interact with all these interesting
Not
people?
Not at all. Like, I'm glad, I don't know what they're going to do with this guy, though. Because, like, again, he did not commit the act, he just threatened to commit the act, and I think he's going to make this plausible deniability claim, too.
Oh, yeah.
Which is to say, I think that should happen in a righteous world, but I would never do such a thing, and I don't know what's going to happen to that argument.
I think if he was making threat, like, I feel like the thing about, talk me out of this or whatever, about the Pride Parade flyer, that feels like pretty strong evidence that he was planning on fucking murdering people. And also, it's not like it's rare anymore. So, yeah, of course this guy was going to do this.
I figured I would end on a slightly happier note. This is in Maine. Again, we're going back to Maine. But this is some news in Maine. Get this. Maine's law, they have a statute of limitations when it comes to childhood sexual abuse.
Mm-hmm.
If you were abused as a child and you want to sue your attacker for civil lawsuit, it turned out that like a law in the year 2000 said, yeah, we had a statute of limitations, but we're going to change it in the year 2000. So they said, look, if it happened prior to 1987, like a really long time ago, you still can't go after it.
Okay.
But if it happened after that, we're going to open the window. So like anything that happened after 1987, if you're still around, you want to see your attacker, go for it.
Okay.
Which is important and good. Because again, the farther back you go, the harder it is to get witnesses and evidence and all of that.
Yeah.
Well, last year they passed a law saying, you know how we said the deadline was like 1987? We're just getting rid of it.
Really?
No statute of limitations. If you want to file a lawsuit against your attacker for child sex abuse, we're opening the window for everybody. You can do it now. And this week, three men filed a lawsuit against the Catholic Diocese of Portland.
Yes.
Or specifically the Bishop of Portland representing that diocese. Because these guys are older men who said prior to 1987, we were abused by a pastor, by a priest in the Catholic Church. And those three men are suing. In one of the lawsuits, one of the guys who first shared his story in 2007 said he was abused on multiple occasions by a priest in 1961 when this guy was 12 years old and working in a church. He said he's the only one that used his name in connection with this. He said there are many survivors like myself who were abused in childhood by the clergy. It's time for the church to stop minimizing the effects of sexual abuse on its victims and take full accountability for their negligence and malice.
Good for him.
I should say the priest in question died in 1976.
Yeah.
But this isn't about the priest. This
no.
is about what the church did to protect
it's the system.
Kids. It's the system. The two other lawsuits were filed by separate people who did not want to be named in public. But three lawsuits this week. All and by the way, that law that changed the getting rid of 1987 as the cutoff date, guess who opposed that law going into effect?
Was it the Catholic Church?
It was the Catholic
Church.
Oh, my
goodness. Yes. They're so unpredictable, those scamps.
Yeah. I mean, remember, this is all stuff like if you go back to Pennsylvania, the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro, who's now running for governor as a Democrat in Pennsylvania, he's the guy that filed that lawsuit against the church
oh,
that
cool.
really tore open this thing where like all of their
bad deeds were laid out in the public. It allowed so many states to say we're doing an investigation into the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. all the dioceses in our state. Mm-hmm. And it also led to different states saying we're going to get rid of the statute of limitations too for these types of cases. Uh-huh. So, and every time they do it, I think in 2019, the Associated Press said over 5,000 lawsuits had been filed in states where similar laws getting rid of the statute of limitations was eliminated. Mm-hmm. 5,000 lawsuits. And they said the bill for the Catholic Church, if it settles for a lot of these cases, which they probably will, could be well over $4 billion.
What?
That was 2019. And that was only when these things started happening. And now you see other states just jumping on it.
Okay.
And the Pennsylvania grand jury report only came out in 2018. Like, it's such a fast, important thing. I mean, so what'll happen with these three lawsuits in Maine? We don't know. It'll take a lot of time to sort out. But again, I hope those are the first of many.
Yeah.
Like, take down the whole place.
And
dude,
you said it's three individuals
who
are all abused by the same priest, or just were abused around the same time?
It's a good question. You know what? I don't know the answer, but I think they were all in the same diocese in Portland.
Gotcha.
Maybe different individual churches and different individual priests, but within the system. So they were suing, I believe, the same diocese. But all three guys from Maine. One guy went public and told his story already.
How many people does it take for a class action lawsuit?
That's, in some cases, a lot. I mean, I don't know if that applies to this type of thing, but, like, for a lot of these people, as soon as that window opened, saying, like, oh, my victimhood, like, is now eligible to file, like, a lot of people jumped on that in the same ways, in the same states, like, and the Catholic Church has no real way to respond. A number of dioceses have gone bankrupt, which, great.
Yeah.
They deserve it. We'll see what happens in this case.
Wow.
Oh, it's been a week.
That's wild.
That's what I got for you.
Oh, boy.
Tell me you have happier things to discuss in a bonus episode. I got one happy thing.
Yeah, I am going to talk about the Cubs game that I went to on Saturday with friend of the podcast, Tyler Meesom. The miniseries Gaslit that I just finished today. The miniseries Stay Sweet that I watched last week. I saw the movie The Thing in theaters.
That's in theaters?
It's for its 40th anniversary.
Ah.
Or 50th? 40th. And then if we have time, apparently Billy Jensen, a true crime journalist, is an asshole. So we can plunge into that if you want to.
All right. You know where to find us. I'm at Hemant Mehta on Twitter.
I'm at Jess Blumke on Twitter.
Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. You know, leave a review, support the show.
Yeah.
Did you know we have a store at friendlyatheistpodcast.com?
We do have a
store. And you can
buy
merch. I just realized that this week after someone emailed me about it.
I would like to buy a shirt from our store. I do not own anything, and I've seen them twice in the wild at meetups, and it was very exciting for me. Would you like to hear a review?
Is it a good review?
It actually is. It's just the top one.
All right.
Peel Me a Grape wrote, cemeteries. Quote, people own cemeteries? Many East Coast lawyers own them as an investment property and then dump them on the municipality.
Where is this going?
To maintain when all the holes are filled, per my coworker at a PT funeral home. It was just,
this is the worst review I've ever heard of this podcast.
Well, they gave us 5 stars, and I didn't read it before I read it. Okay, how about this one? Most trusted religious source news. Thank you for your, because apparently I asked, do people own cemeteries? Crazy Town Daddy is what I'm guessing. There's no vowels in those. 5 stars. Must hear weekly podcast. I love the chemistry being between the dark and serious Hemant. You think that's racist? With lively and passionate Jessica and white Jessica. You didn't. The contrast is what makes things work. I like listening when Jessica is off, even though it's a bit like listening to someone read tax law without her. You're boring.
I know.
JK, you're both amazing and a light in the darkness over here in the Bible Belt. Yeah, keep up the great work, and we will always be here, your faithful listeners. Thanks for all you do, and happy Father's Day, Hemant.
Aw, thank you.
Sweet.
All right, we'll talk to you all next week. Bonus episode coming up.
Goodbye.